Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Here in Southern California, we've had two massive wildfires that have wreaked havoc in our own Angeles National Forest. Back in 2009, the Station Fire, which was the largest L.A. County fire at that point, tore through the Angeles and ended up closing the majority of trails, burn areas. Many of those still need time to regrow after that fire of 12 years ago. And then, of course, last fall, we had the Bobcat Fire, which did additional extensive damage to the Angeles National Forest. But an even bigger problem in terms of the percentage of acreage destroyed is faced by Big Basin State Park, a redwood park south of San Francisco Bay. There, 97% of that gorgeous state park was burned over in one of the huge lightning complex fires that occurred in late summer up in Northern California. With us to talk about the challenge at Big Basin and what parks have to deal with or forests deal with generally after massive fires is environment reporter for CalMatters, Julie Cart. Julie, thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you, Larry.
Let's talk about Big Basin. For those who've not been to that beautiful Redwood State Park, what was lost?
Everything. It is a landscape park. It's a park people go to admire the tallest trees on earth. Beautiful rolling mountains, the Santa Cruz Range. The park goes right down to the ocean, so there's parts of the park on the Pacific that are beaches. There are historic buildings. So 97% of the park was burned, and there's a distinction to be made, and I think your guest Joanne will go into this, but it burned but was not all destroyed. Buildings were destroyed, trails were destroyed, man-made infrastructure was destroyed, and certainly many, many trees burned and died. But redwoods, as we know, are quite resilient, and it doesn't mean that they're all dead. In fact, about 90% will come back. So it is a kind of a moonscape. It's not a pretty looking place, but it's definitely coming back, and there's regrowth already.
And what's the estimate for how long visitors will be kept out of the park to protect it during this delicate regrowth phase?
Well, that's a question that was asked many times, and nobody has given us a straight answer because they don't know. Probably a piece of the park that is down by the beach will be open by the summer, so maybe Memorial Day. The thing that they're dealing with now is not only the infrastructure, rebuilding roads, getting amenities like water and power into the park, but it's quite dangerous. There's a public safety issue. The trees are standing, they're like zombie trees. They're standing dead. They just don't know it yet. It can take 3 to 5 years for them to be knocked over. You can imagine how dangerous that is. So what they call hazard trees have to be identified. They have to be cut, and that's quite laborious because it's a lot of hiking, and you know it's not a simple thing to do, and they just need to make sure that there's a safety element. So it will easily be a year, if not more.
One of the big challenges, and we'll get into this with the expert of the Angeles National Forest, but it's not just the fire, it's the rains afterward with water coming off the denuded hillsides, leading to slides and trails that end up covered and slides that even knock down other trees, all of that. And the San Gabriel's a particularly steep range, and you know there's not much holding the soil once the burn off occurs. But I wonder if that's also an issue with Big Basin, concerns about what water damage could now result.
Oh, absolutely. That gravel that comes down, San Gabriel's are young mountains and very steep. and not so much in Santa Cruz. But, you know, the only benefit, and no one would say this aloud, but the only benefit of the drought was the feared rains and storms that were expected over the winter didn't really occur. So they didn't have a giant problem. You have sedimentation in creeks, so that affects aquatic species, water quality, water quantity. And you're right, just the integrity of these hillsides, you need the vegetation to hold those soils in. That is a future problem. But it did not. Right now, they kind of dodged that bullet.
Now, the money for this, where's it going to come from? Because as you point out in your piece, even the road construction and the challenge just to get the roads in to be able to do the kind of rehab necessary is hugely expensive for a park of this size.
There's nothing cheap about what is going on there. It would have been a lot cheaper to start from scratch than it is to repair and rebuild, just for lots of logistical reasons. It's about, early days, these are estimates, about $186 million just for the first swath of what the park will have to do. It's coming from FEMA. It's coming from taxpayers. We're going to pay for it, either on the state or federal level, as we should. This is our property. It comes from FEMA, and the state and the park gets to recoup a percentage of that under certain conditions. And then the rest of it, this is a beloved park, and there are a lot of groups that have raised quite a lot of substantial funds. In fact, the park was created from a nonprofit group that donated the land. So it has a constituency that is expected to raise quite a lot of money. And then the last piece of it, there's a $2 billion infrastructure funding that the president is hoping to get funded, and they have their hand up for that. The state will try to get some money for that, and the park directly will try to. So we shall see, but it's going to be quite costly and very slow.
We're talking with Julie Card, environment reporter for Cal Matters. She wrote the recent piece, Battered, Burned But Alive, Time Will Heal Park's Wounds, but it needs big money too. Julie Card with us. When we come back, we'll talk with Joanne Kerbovitz, who is senior environmental scientist at Big Basin Redwoods State Park, south of the San Francisco Bay Area, which was so devastated by one of the Lightning Complex fires up there. And we'll talk with the deputy monument manager of the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument. She was the agency administrator representative on last year's Bobcat fire. We'll find out what's being learned about the future of the Angeles National Forest and the San Gabriels generally. We'll be back in just 90 seconds on Air Talk. You're listening to Air Talk on KPCC. We're talking next hour about President Biden's address to Congress last evening and the American Families plan that he unveiled last night. We'll talk about how the money would be raised to do it, what the different provisions of it are, and we'll hear the pros and cons. That's coming up next hour on Air Talk here on KPCC. We'll also be looking at what appears likely to soon be implemented, a ban on menthol cigarettes, which about 85% of black smokers use menthol. So there is a split of perspective on that. We'll hear the pros and cons of that ban coming up next hour here on KPCC. Right now, we're talking about the future of national parks and forests and state parks after they've been devastated by massive wildfires. Big Basin Redwood State Park dealing with this south of the Bay Area, where 97% of the park was burned over. Julie Card of Cal Matters explained that doesn't mean all the trees were burned down. It's a big redwood park, but the damage was extensive. Similarly, in the Angeles National Forest, we've had two massive fires within the past 12 years. Back in 2009, it was the Station Fire, and trails were closed for many years afterwards. I think some are still closed from that. And then the Bobcat Fire, which burned many acres just a few months ago. Joining us from Big Basin Redwood State Park is senior environmental scientist Joanne Kerbovitz. Joanne, thank you very much. We appreciate your being with us. Let's talk about the trees. Did most of the redwoods survive?
Well, redwoods are remarkably resilient. They wouldn't still be here if they weren't. They're of an ancient lineage. They've been in California, some people think, up to 20 million years. And so they've seen a lot. They are remarkably resilient from any type of disturbance. And at least from what we've seen so far, I think what we're seeing in Big Basin is what would we would expect, that the vast majority of the redwood trees are, even if they have been burnt, are sprouting either from their bases or from along the stem and on the branches.
And what about other vegetation that was destroyed? Does that pose any longer-term risk to the redwoods? Is there some sort of a symbiotic relationship with say, ground plants or things like that that could pose a threat?
Well, we do expect almost everything to come back. We don't expect any large changes in the vegetation. Almost everything in these forests has some ability to come back after fire. Now, there are some species that are more sensitive to fire than others, and we would expect some temporary shifts, but just about everything in that forest, a lot of the hardwood trees, the fires will kill the upper portion of the tree, but almost all of them sprout back, and we're already seeing sprouts from some of those trees that are up to 6 feet high. So this regeneration process has clearly begun. And the areas that might change the most, some of the areas that do look like that moonscape that Julie described, are the areas that are along the ridges and are ones that would already be hotter and drier and already have vegetation that responds to that hotter and drier condition.
One of the things that we've heard about, you know, the nature of fires in recent years as our climate has warmed is that they're of much greater intensity. I don't know whether you saw that in this fire at Big Basin and the surrounding hills, or whether this was sort of a more typical what you would have seen, you know, long time ago in a forest fire.
Well, severity of fire is influenced by many things. And in this particular event, we had a week of record high temperatures, record low humidities, record low moisture in the fuels that were involved, and then we added high winds and thousands of lightning strikes. So that's an event that is just unprecedented, certainly in any of our lives. Now, if the consensus is true and things are getting hotter and drier, that would push us towards the potential for more severe fires and more frequent fires.
We're talking about the CZU Lightning Complex fires and the massive damage done to Big Basin Redwood State Park. Also joining us to talk about the Angeles National Forest is Adrian Dunphy, who's Deputy Monument Manager at the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument. She was Agency Administrator on last year's Bobcat Fire. Adrian, thank you for being with us. Where does the Angeles stand after the Bobcat?
So I would say that we're experiencing a lot of the same challenges that both Julie and Joanne talked about. We do have a closure order that's in effect for a large portion of the Bobcat Fire through at least April of 2022. And that's really to keep the public safe and to give the land time to heal. You know, we're looking at over 100,000 acres that was burnt. So we've obviously not been able to get eyes on every piece of that. But we believe that there, from what we've seen, you know, similar conditions, a lot of patchwork burning. So we do believe that we'll see a lot of natural regeneration and revegetation.
You had someone who was rescued from the middle of the Bobcat burn area about a week or so ago. He was lost and sent a photo, and someone recognized where they thought he was, and thankfully he was rescued. But how do people get into those areas that are closed?
Well, so you're probably aware we don't have a big fence around the National Forest or our closure area. We've done our best to post signs. To inform the public, we put the information on our website. But we really have a very, a public that loves the area. Since COVID-19, we've just seen increased visitation, increased folks wanting to get out and enjoy their public lands. And, we're not really sure how he missed all of the signs and just sort of, symptoms of a burned forest, but we're, continuing to look in that to make sure that doesn't happen to someone else in the future.
And the fire, going back to the station fire, which I know predates your work with San Gabriel Mountains National Monument, but how long does it take for the forest to get back to what it was after a massive, super hot fire like that?
So I would say we may not ever get back to what it was. We're still dealing with a lot of the impacts, still trying to reopen some of the trails that were closed, work with a lot of partners to replant native species and remove invasive plants in some of our watersheds. And I work closely with Southern California Edison to rebuild some of the infrastructure that was lost, including the Vetter Mountain Lookout and the Wildwood Picnic Area. But when fires do burn super hot, it can, permanently cause that regime change. So we're doing our best to restore some of the native vegetation, but it's likely that some of those landscapes may never look quite like they did before the station fire.
If you have questions for our guests about Big Basin Redwood State Park, south of San Francisco, indefinitely closed after fire burned over 97% of the acreage of that state park, or about the Angeles National Forest in the San Gabriel Mountains after the Bobcat Fire, which followed just 12 years, which actually isn't very long for a forest, after the station fire, which did massive damage and caused closure of many of the trails in the Angeles. 866-893-KPECC for your questions of our three guests. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute right here on Air Talk. We're looking at what happens to state and national forests once fire burns through a large portion of those forest areas. We're talking about Big Basin Redwood State Park up south of San Francisco, where 97% of its acreage was burned over, and the Angeles National Forest here in Southern California, where there were huge acres that were burned by fire, and with all that acreage being so significantly damaged, that's had an effect on trails and the like. So it's closed off a good portion of the Angeles. We're at 866-893-KPECC. With me is environment reporter for Cal Matters, Julie Cart. With us from the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument, Adrian Dunphy, and from Big Basin Redwood State Park, senior environmental scientist Joanne Kerbovitz. Roy in Hollywood says, how much of the damage to Big Basin was caused by human fire suppression, allowing fuel to build up and therefore create more intense fires? Joanne, you want to respond to that?
Sure. Again, this was an incredibly severe event that had a lot of factors that led to that severity. It within the redwood forest, it is a moisture forest than most and traditionally has only occurred in areas that have the connection to the coast and that coastal fog. So it's a system that's far more moist than a lot of the other forests we're talking about in California. And this is an area where the frequency of fire before humans got here might be different from the frequency after the time of humans arriving in California. So there are a lot of different conditions in the redwood forest and a lot of different things that can lead to areas that have fuel or don't have as much fuel. Now, within Big Basin itself, there has been a history of prescribed fires, and one of the goals is, of course, to reduce the fuel accumulation. But in an event such as this, there are drivers that probably have more of an effect than the fuel itself.
All right. Adrian Dunphy of the San Gabriels, same question for you. how much of this might have been attributed to fuel building up and fire suppression previously?
Sure, that is a great question. I think, you know, like was mentioned, we were experiencing unprecedented conditions last year, and we, you know, do have an active fuels treatment program, but we saw even in the Bobcat, we saw the station fire scar area reburn, which, like you mentioned, had just been 12 years prior. So that was really something that we were pretty surprised by. So I think that it was just, you know, the conditions last year were not something that were expected, and we're hoping that we don't see similar conditions, but unfortunately it seems we probably will be.
Well, the table is sadly set for that with the drought that we've experienced this year. So, Adrian, what sort of preparation, if any, is being done for the San Gabriels? I was going to say when fire season comes, but there sort of isn't a fire season anymore, right? It's all the time.
That's right. We have a year-round firefighting forces. We do augment those crews in the summer, but we have been slowly converting more of our employees to year-round, just due to the kind of the change to more of that fire year. But we train all year. We've had some early season fires already. The Springs fire we had on in the Bayermo area earlier this month, and I think we all saw the news yesterday. The North fire in the Castaic area was not on us, but we did send crews to help assist in that effort.
All right. We have Chad from Redondo Beach wondering, is there a plan to staff any of the historic fire towers in the San Gabriels to see if that might help get early jump on the fires? Adrian?
So we do. We have a great volunteer organization, the Angeles National Forest Fire Lookout Association. They're a very dedicated group of many, many volunteers. They do staff the Vedder Mountain Lookout, which even though the infrastructure had not been in place, they had been staffing from a kind of a makeshift setup there for the past several years. And they also staff Slide Lookout. So that does provide some additional eyes and ears out there, in addition to air recons that happen, as well as our other patrols that are out there on the ground.
Jeff in San Marino wanted to know if Sturtevant Camp had survived the Bobcat fire. My recollection is there was one outbuilding that was destroyed, but the camp generally survived. Is that right, Adrian?
That's correct. Very fortunate that the majority of Sturtevant was safe and sound. Unfortunately, a lot of the historic recreation cabins nearby were lost, but that area is, you know, within the closure area, so it will be inaccessible to the public for some time, but we look forward to the time when that area can be reopened and that Sturtevant camp reopened to the public.
When you say some time, I assume, you know, part of this is safety, is you know, clearing everything and snags and making sure it's safe for the public to enter. Do you have any even general timeline for when that could be?
Well, like I mentioned, so our broader closure area or closure order is in effect through April of 2022. We do constantly reevaluate that based on conditions, and we've modified that boundary a couple of times already. For instance, we were able to get the Mount Wilson Observatory out of the closure area after we deemed that it was safe in the immediate area there, and really public could visit the observatory with no impact to the resources. But certain pockets of the forest, the West Fork area, the Big Santa Anita Canyon area, those areas did burn very hot, and they do have a lot of danger. So it's possible that some of those areas will be closed longer than April 2022. It's just hard to say right now when all the different areas can be released for public access.
Adrian Dunphy's Deputy Monument Manager, the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument, and was the agency administrator on last year's Bobcat fire. Also with us is Joanne Kerbovitz, who is Senior Environmental Scientist at Big Basin Redwood State Park. Julie Card of CalMatters was talking, Joanne, about you know, the safety issues that are there to even get in and do the work. And is that already underway in Big Basin?
We're working with the Department of Office of Environmental Services right now to take out some of the human hazards, things like asbestos or other potential toxics. We're also working on removing the hazard trees, the dead and dying and compromised trees that are along the roads and trails and in public use areas. So that work is underway. But as Julie said, it's an ongoing process. As we open up new areas or look at opening new areas, we'll have to look at the hazards in those areas as well.
All right. Well, we wish you all the best with the massive undertaking to once again reopen Big Basin Redwood State Park south of the San Francisco Bay Area. Thank you so much, Joanne, for being with us. Julie Card of Cal Matters environmental reporter with a terrific piece describing the massive challenge that awaits Big Basin. And our thanks to Adrian Dunphy from right here in Southern California, the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument, and of course the Angeles National Forest, which is a part of that. Coming up, much more in the second hour of Air Talk. Also want to remind you, if you missed our Film Week Academy Award preview, which I've heard from some, thought it was particularly entertaining, particularly compared to the actual Oscars, you can still see that by visiting kpecc.org/in-person. Our critics were in very fine form on that virtual event. Much more to come next hour.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.